We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by WinBet. I'm your host, James Anderson, and this week I am lucky to be joined by Jeff Erickson, who is RotoWire's senior editor, a FSWA Hall of Famer. And this is Jeff's first baseball podcast of the offseason, which is kind of crazy considering he probably does more media than anyone else at the company. But really glad that you could take the time, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm psyched to talk baseball. Even though we have the lockout and what all that comes with that, I am super excited. In fact, I'm planning on starting up a series of like team previews, even if the lockout's still going. I just want to have like 30 minutes where I want to talk like with one person that is like so into a particular team. We'll just dive into that team. I think that's some good offseason content. So I'm looking forward to that. And you know, right, you know, getting ready for drafts. I'm ready to jump into a DC. I'm probably going to do that later this week. Get my first draft going over there too.
Nice. I mean, that's the best way to kind of get really locked in on the player pool. And I know that you're already, you know, locked in to some extent because you do our projections, and
yep,
you can see those up on the website right now, rotowire.com/pod for a free 10-day trial. But since you are in charge of those, I wanted to kind of ask you about some of the guys who, if I were doing projections, might be the toughest for me to project, and sort of ask about how you went about that. And the first guy I wanted to ask you about is the player, at least the position player, who I think is kind of the most obvious regression candidate this year, Marcus Semien. He returned first round value last year, played in 162 games in one of the best lineups in baseball. And he's not only, there's obvious kind of signs of regression just if he had stayed in Toronto, but now he's heading to a worse lineup, a worse ballpark. So how do you go about kind of figuring out just how much to lop off of what Semien put up last season?
It's a great question. And it leads to the greater process too. So I use, as a starting point, I use three-year weighted averages for my projections. And then I, you know, dig into the StatCast notes. I dig into like, you know, ballpark playing time, all that sort of stuff. Look at the age and adjust accordingly. But you can't, it's doing any sort of projection. You know, your data that we're using, we're dealing with happy fun ball in 2019. We're dealing with a 60 game schedule in 2020 and an unbalanced schedule with that. And then last year, two different baseballs. I mean, that came out at the end of the season that baseball actually, you know, they deadened the ball, but then they sneakily added the old ball back in. And then, you know, the grip enhancement got cracked down on. So it's been, there's so many different factors. It's like, you're almost starting with bad data. And that's really a tough part, starting point. With Semien in particular, you know, age 31, right? You know, power peak is still there, but you got to figure natural regression is going to start to kick in before you even start to look at what he did, which was so off the charts. I almost worry if I didn't regress him enough. I'm looking at the projection I did for him, and I've got 10 fewer homers. I've got a lot fewer RBI. Probably not. I think I probably should cut off a few more runs. I don't think that Texas lineup's going to knock him in as often. The other thing is, like, how much is he going to run? He was 15 to 16 on the base pass. I don't think people realize that how much of a value add he was there, and how much better that was than previous years for him. You know, he was 10 of 18 in 2019, 14 of 20 the year before that. He was almost perfect last year. And so that naturally is going to regress too.
Yeah. I mean, my sort of natural reaction whenever a guy's coming off like such an obvious career year is to just, you know, fade them extremely hard the next year. So like I would take Tim Anderson over Marcus Semien pretty easily right now. But maybe I'm being like sort of too robotic in that, just obviously Semien had a such a career year last year. I mean, you look at like the home runs, even if he had, you know, you can go to Baseball Savant and they have that like fun tool that shows how many home runs a guy would have hit in different ballparks and stuff. And like,
right,
I think there's like an 11 homer difference between Toronto and Texas for him because he's such a pull heavy guy.
And it wasn't even just, and sorry to interrupt, but it wasn't just Toronto last year. It was Dunedin. It was Buffalo, you know, too. And, you know, Dunedin, I think he did really well down there, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, you add in that factor. Yeah, it's certainly someone that you would think that he should drop off quite a bit.
And that,
go ahead.
That Rangers lineup, like, I mean, the, you know, Corey Seager's great, but like I'm looking at roster resource, they have Willie Calhoun leading off and Adolis Garcia hitting cleanup. Like, I mean, who knows if that's actually accurate, but I mean, the drop off in terms of from the runs and the RBI standpoint, I mean, that might be, I mean, the power of the runs in the RBI, I think, is where he's just going to lose a ton of ground. And it's very challenging to kind of figure out how much ground he loses there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, one of the things, like, I'm still in that, like, I've done the first batch of projections, right? But I still have to kind of like battle test them. I still have to kind of go through like, okay, this projection spits out this ranking. I'm going to be in a draft. That's why I'm looking forward to doing a DC, doing some best balls and jumping and say, okay, I've got Semien. He's sitting there at the beginning of the third round. He's still available. Okay. Am I going to take him? And who are my alternatives if I don't take him? And that's just the question. And sure, of course, it's going to depend on, okay, do I have a pitcher yet? How much is that? Does that matter to me? Where are my stolen bases? These are all things you have to add in. But, you know, the ultimate battle test is just being put to the test. Like, okay, this is what the ranking says. Am I going to follow that? And I use our tools. You know, I use our draft software religiously. And I try to tweak my rankings, my projections, so that they fit what my draft preferences are too.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the battle testing part, I mean, that's going to be fascinating to sort of see which guys you end up kind of moving up and moving down throughout the draft season. And like, I kind of like drafting during the lockout. I don't want the lockout to continue, obviously, but it's a nice way to kind of distract yourself, and there like nothing is changing in terms of the news. The next guy I want to ask you about is Wander Franco, who obviously had a really strong rookie season. You know, the strikeout rate, the bat to ball hit tool, everything carried over about as good as you could hope for a rookie. But at the same time, you know, he hit 7 homers in 70 games. He attempted just 3 steals in 70 games. You know, the batting average, I'm sure, and the runs scored, probably not that much of a struggle for projecting him, right? I mean, you can probably feel right, pretty good about the skills there, but how do you go about projecting the power and the speed for Franco, who's got an ADP of 61 right now?
No, and the thing is, you're always looking at the past stats and you're like, okay, he hasn't done it yet. But then you look at age to level every single year and you're like, okay, well, he's 3 years behind everybody there. And he's, you know, the batting eye has been there. He's not like he's not hitting the ball with authority. He's just not hitting it over the fence that much. But I think I'll be somewhere between where Clay has him, which I think I last saw was 37, and where projection systems like Fangraphs and, you know, where Steamer's going to have him, where the bat's going to have him. And some of that's playing time, right? Steamer is going to be usually pretty circumspect on playing. Now, although I'm looking at their projection for him, and it's actually, I was looking at Semien. Never mind. I was like, whoa, they have him for 30 homers. Oh, that's not Wander Franco. That's Semien. Sorry. But Steamer is going to be a little bit more circumspect usually. They're going to be a little bit calmer. But I think this is the Vlad theory. You want to be there to get the breakout. You know, you want to be able to get the profit. You know, if you got it last year, if you were able to go above what the numbers suggest, you know, have done so far, you want to be there for that. The problem is, you know, with Vlad, it was year 3. It wasn't year 2. So that's the tricky part.
Yeah, I'd be interested in asking Clay where he's got him in terms of homers and steals, because I think the batting, I think his top fantasy skill is batting average. I think he absolutely can be an anchor for you there. And then it's just a matter of roster construction for me, because like, do I want to, and I think Steamer might even be high on the 10 steals for Franco. And that's kind of been my drawback on drafting him where he's going. You know, batting average, I feel like that is, it's not easy to make up later in drafts. But, you know, do I want to take Wander Franco for one of my middle infield spots over someone like Jazz Chisholm or Tommy Edman, who could flirt with 30 steals? Like that's kind of where things get interesting for me. And just from a roster construction standpoint, I haven't really been interested in Franco just because I don't see him taking a step forward in terms of stolen base attempts. He's a thicker guy for a young guy. Like he's a middle infielder and, you know, top prospect and everything. So we kind of assume there's speed there, but I don't know. I'd take the under on 10 steals. I'd probably take the under on 25 homers. And so, you know, at that point,
I went 16 homers and eight steals with him, for what it's worth. You know, playing time's going to be there. The runs are going to be, that's the one thing where he's also true, obviously a plus. I just did my hitting categories target article up on the site, and, you know, stolen bases are down again. And so, I think there was like 19 guys that stole 20 bases last year. And that number keeps dwindling every single year. The number that we need to get to the 80th percentile, I think, is like 104 now for 80th percentile on stolen bases. So you don't need a 30 stolen base guy, is my point. But, you know, you get an admin, you get someone like that, and it obviously makes a huge difference. It's just, you want to make sure they do other things too. And so I look at the, you know, Franco's ADP is like 58 or so starting since December 1st on the NFBC. And I always use the NFBC for ADP. It's 56, excuse me. I think I've got him around 65, 70 or so. So there'll be a league or two where that I'll get him. But I'm probably with you that I'm probably not going to get him in most places. Like, I'd rather get my stolen bases from Rosarena, his teammate. I'd rather... You know, I think sometimes the younger guy doesn't get as many opportunities to run that first year, first full year. Now, it might be different with him because obviously he's locked in terms of contractually. He's not a threat to get sent down. He's got his 11-year deal. They're fully backing him. But maybe it takes a year to learn how to read pitchers a little bit more. Maybe he's not like blinding speed, like you said. He's not the guy that's ran wild in the minors, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, a couple guys that I would just throw out who I think can give you fairly similar production to Franco this year. Ketel Marte, who has an ADP of 90, and DJ LeMahieu, who has an ADP of 117. And I'm using Draft Champions over the past like 3 weeks. And like, there's nothing sexy about taking Ketel Marte or DJ LeMahieu. And they probably don't have the same amount of upside as Franco, and LeMahieu's not going to steal as many bases as Franco, even though I don't think Franco's going to steal 10. But I mean, that's kind of the statistical profile that you're looking at, and I think you're really having to pay up for that prospect pedigree with him.
Yeah, LeMahieu's interesting too, because he was a classic overdraft last year. Now he's a last year's bum. Can he stay healthy? What is his true level? You know, is he a guy that totally benefited from the ball with that big power spike? And what's the ball going to be like this year? I think he's one of those guys that really benefits, you know, a guy that relies on opposite field power. You know, is the ball going to carry for him?
Yeah, I know more Yankee fans than I feel like I should, but they all tell me that he was playing hurt last year and that he's going to bounce back. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
I can see it.
This next group, it's a long list of pitchers. They all come with some level of injury concern, and I'll just read them off and we can kind of jump around to whoever you think is interesting, but, roughly in order of ADP, Jacob DeGrom, Shane Bieber, Chris Sale, Jack Flaherty, Luis Severino, Clayton Kershaw, Lance McCullers, Mike Clevenger, and Noah Syndergaard. We've seen all of these guys have pitched at extremely high levels. Maybe with the exception of like Lance McCullers, they've pitched at, you know, SP1 levels, and yet they're all coming into the year with significant durability concerns. How many innings are they going to throw? That type of thing. So,
right.
Which guys stand out here as sort of guys that gave you the most trouble?
Well, of course, you got to start with DeGrom. I mean, rate wise, he was pitching at a historical level. Even in a half a season, you know, he didn't kill you by his absence, but at the same time, how many innings are you confident projecting for him for next year? And does something change? Does he like lower his velocity at all to try to stay healthier? Is that a thing? You know, and that's a tricky part. So I've got him for 127 innings. The problem with him is, you know, it's almost like half measures with him. You know, he could be awesome and go 30 starts, or he could be a disaster and get 5 starts. There's just no, you know, it's hard to middle that there, if you know what I'm saying.
It's almost like you kind of have to, you know, going into drafts, he's either on your board or he's not on your board.
Right. And what's your answer?
I'm not taking him. It's one of those where I am okay being wrong, but I am not okay. I'm okay being wrong by passing on him, but I'm not okay being wrong by taking him.
It's a lot of draft capital. Yeah.
I just don't think you're getting, I don't even know where he'd have to be going for me to take him, honestly. Cause it's just, I'm really trying to hit singles and doubles with those like early picks, and like I'm trying to bank stats, and then I can take some risks later in the draft with like my SP5 or something like that. But
sure,
you know, if he stays, if he meets your projection, even if he just gets 127 innings, he's worth his ADP, right?
I think so. Although I've got him as at least. I've got him as pitcher 12, at least according to the algorithm we got going right now. I may adjust that here and there a little bit, but, you know, starting pitcher 10, I guess I'd be starting pitcher 10 because I got 2 closers above him. But it's interesting. Bieber versus DeGrom, both guys enter with big question marks, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would take a closer over both those guys.
I think I would too.
And I mean, the thing with, you know, if DeGrom does pitch the 127, he might be the 10th pitcher, but you're also starting another pitcher those times when he's not pitching.
Right.
So, you know, he's a guy that could swing leagues for sure.
And since we're not Phil Dussault, we don't have Ranger Suarez there to swap Wyatt in for him there either. So.
Yeah, I mean, Phil was probably one of the first guys to cut DeGrom in main events.
He was. I remember that. In fact, when I had him on the pod, we were talking about that, and he just nailed that there. He also he also cut, who was it? Walker Buehler, just in time for the Cincinnati and Colorado Coors Field starts, which were both bad starts for him, too. I mean, he did some, like, visionary stuff there. That was just wild. But, yeah, that's why he's Phil and we're not. But, you know. I guess that's it there. Yeah, but Bieber on its face is interesting too. I mean, I'm wary of guys coming back from a shoulder problem. You know, the track record of guys coming back from that and being just fine, it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's how would you rank, you know, a guy like DeGrom, who ends the year with an elbow issue that could lead to Tommy John, a guy like Bieber, who came back from a shoulder injury to close the year, or a guy like Chris Sale, who came back from Tommy John to close the year?
You know, I'm inclined to take Sale at his price more than the first two. He had a couple more outings, although I guess his price isn't that much of a discount off of those guys. It's maybe a round or two. But yeah, you look at, you know, Sale is going, what, about 50th overall? He's still probably your first or second starter. Longer track record, I guess. For whatever reason, I feel like a little safer with Sale than I do Bieber or DeGrom.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. And I think people forget just how dominant he is in K's when he is healthy. And that could be a huge value for you there if you get him in the fourth round and he's back to being a sale.
Yeah, I mean, and I just think there's going to be fewer restrictions on him by Boston probably than like Cleveland might have for Bieber.
Sure.
And, you know, like Bieber wouldn't be on my, like Bieber's not a guy who I've just got crossed off kind of like DeGrom, but he's going late second round and I'd just rather take Sandy Alcantara there.
You've Sale, always been the Sandy guy though, too.
I have always been the Sandy guy, but, yeah, that bandwagon is at capacity now.
It is.
Chris Sale though, like you said, he's going, you know, an early fourth round. So Chris Sale as your SP2, maybe, you know, Chris Sale versus taking one of those elite relievers there. I probably still lean towards, just getting like a Ryan Pressly and just not having to worry about that. But
that's been a hot topic, by the way, the elite relievers going earlier and earlier. And there's been some pushback lately on baseball Twitter. I like seeing this disorder's discussion. I'm sold on getting one elite closer. I didn't think I would be, but last year's experience has kind of just pushed me there. What say you?
So for me, it's not a thing where I think like I'm not going to tell people you should take one of these relievers like that. That's the best strategy. I just think for me, it's the best strategy for like personally, because maybe the thing I'm weakest at in fantasy is getting late saves. And so like there's a peace of mind for me leaving a draft with two of the top 15 closers, especially guys that I'm confident have the role when we're drafting at this point in the calendar. So, you know, if you're someone who has had a lot of success getting cheap saves or working the wire for saves, like that type of thing, then by all means, you know, I mean, it's so easy to just go on Twitter and be like, I can't believe people are taking closers where they're taking them, you know, like, well, you know, that's easy to say, but for me anyways, it's been a challenge to compete in saves without spending up. And like last year, I thought I probably spent up more regularly in drafts, and that ended up serving me pretty well. Obviously there's risk with taking these guys, obviously, but to me, the third and fourth round, it's just littered with guys that I don't really want. And so, or I don't really want it at the cost, and that's in terms of starting pitchers and hitters. And so I'd rather just take an elite closer there than take, you know, someone who, is going to give me production that I think I could get similar production like later. Like you're not getting similar production to, you know, Emmanuel Clase or Ryan Pressly in the seventh round in all likelihood, but you could get similar production to like Logan Webb, you know, a few rounds later. So to me, it's just kind of a scarcity issue. And it's just my personal track record is so poor at getting saves late that I'm willing to pay up for it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I kind of arrived at the same conclusion. Did two main event leagues last year. One, we got the early closer in Kenley Jansen, and you know, he was fine. He was one of the last of that group. But we didn't have to sweat saves as much, and you had to get another closer, but the other main, we waited until the double digit rounds, and yay, we got Jake McGee, right? Yay. But we also whiffed on the Padres. We whiffed on so many pickups. And the other problem too, is when you're dipping into that and you're having to hustle on the waiver wire, typically you're trying to go from bad teams. You're trying to get the Orioles closer, or you're trying to get a closer on another bad team, and you're the Royals. And maybe you eventually got on Barlow, but it took you a long time for him to get that job. And he didn't even have it full time. And you deal with that. Plus there's just fewer save opportunities too. I mean, the Orioles, they went on a 20 game losing streak, for crying out loud. I mean, there's zero value in that. And you've got that guy active, and you have to have that guy active for you to benefit from the two. You don't know when they're going to stop losing like that. So I'm being persuaded more and more that just get your two closers and hopefully they stay healthy and they keep the job. And then you don't have to sweat that. You save money in fab and the 15 teamers. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. And in the 15 teamers, especially it's like easy to say, well, I'll just wait for that, like next tier, the guys that go in like the seventh round or something like that, but you're not guaranteed to not get shut out on those guys.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you're like, well, I'm going to take like Blake Treinen or something like that, way ahead of ADP because I don't have a single closer yet. And if I get shut out, like then all of a sudden I'm working with like Gregory Soto or something. So,
right.
I mean, let's actually just, I had these guys a little further down, but let's just jump to, so I think three guys that are really interesting in terms of projections are Craig Kimbrell, Camilo Duvall, and Blake Treinen, because, you know, it would seem like Duvall and Treinen are the best relievers in the bullpens of two really good teams in the Giants and the Dodgers right now. And it would seem like the White Sox can't possibly not trade Kimbrell because of how mediocre he was for them as a setup man. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what's your level of confidence projecting Kimbrell, Duvall, and Treinen during the lockout for a full closer's workload?
So difficult, especially because Kenley's still out there as a free agent. And I'm not convinced that he's not coming back. That's like a double negative there. I think he will come back to the Dodgers. He's a lifelong Dodger. I just think there's going to be some sentiment there. I think, and he's not, if he signs with the Dodgers, he can't fit any other role. He's not going to be an ace reliever that comes in the seventh inning. He's going to be the closer. And then they'll use Treinen wherever they need to use him. Then Treinen will pick up some saves here and there. But I think Kenley will still be the guy there. I think it'll just like, it's not necessarily kowtowing the veteran. It's more, okay, we can use him for 30 spots. And then Treinen will pick up 10 or 15 saves, but it's not going to be as a full-time closer. So I think you run the risk of like thinking you're getting 30 saves from Treinen and you might get five, you might get 10. You could get 30, but that's the problem with drafting right now, right? You know, you just don't know. With San Francisco, I'm not convinced Duvall is the best closer still. And he walks a ton of guys. Even last year at AAA, 24 walks in 30 innings. That's not something you want, someone you want to close. I'm not convinced. I think we'll still see a lot of McGee. I'd be surprised if we don't.
Well, I think Duvall's got the best stuff, but I think, like, you know, there's some similarities here between Duvall and James Karinchak a season ago.
Yeah.
You know, just that young, super high upside reliever that it's really easy to just dream on him being like the next, you know, surefire top five closer year in, year out. But yeah, we are working with a very small sample of him having adequate command, although he finished the year strongly. Do you want to hear my kind of out there prediction that involves a couple of these guys?
Please, I do.
I think the Dodgers might trade for Kimbrell because they just have such a logjam in their farm system, especially in terms of infielders. They're not possibly going to have enough room for all these guys, and the White Sox have one of the worst farm systems in baseball, and the Dodgers, I mean, just paying Craig Kimbrell 15 mil for one season, like that's nothing to them. Mm-hmm. Versus I think like it seems to me like Kenley, like I think whoever signs him is going to sign him to a bad contract, just from a medical standpoint. I can't see giving him like a 3 or 4 year deal. And so if I were the Dodgers, the idea of just trading a prospect I don't have room for 1 year of Kimbrell, who did look elite when he was closing last season, that would be appealing to me. So I'm very interested to see where Kimbrell goes. I'm very interested to see where Kenley signs, because for all of us who've been doing these DCs, you know, over these last couple months, you know, most of us have at least one team where a lot's riding on somebody getting saves who by the time opening day gets here might not be the guy getting saves.
Yeah. And just got to remember it isn't a disaster if that happens. I mean, you can, it's a minor disaster, but it's recoverable at least. We'll see. XFL, I kept Jake McGee, so we'll see if that was an error. But I know the 37 Ks look pretty promising, but Duvall gave up 4 homers in 27 innings and the 9 walks. I mean, that's actually better command than he showed in the minors, but I just worry too much that, you know, you're going to start seeing like, okay, walks the bases loaded in the ninth inning. Kapler's going to be like, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with him in the ninth. He's also a pretty progressive manager, and he might just say, okay, he's an ace reliever. We'll use him a lot of different ways too. So we'll see about that. As far the Kimbrel deal, you're right. He was much better as a closer with the Cubs. I think the skills are still there. I hesitate to try to read too much out of what he did in a couple of months with the White Sox. So I think he's still got the skills to be able to do it. That'd be I'd like to see that sort of trade, see what sort of happened. And like you mentioned, the White Sox don't have a whole lot in the pipeline. They traded away Madrigal already. So we'll see. I mean, Cesar Hernandez is gone. He's in DC. So are they really, they have no depth right now. I could see them trading for a middle infielder pretty easily.
Well, and the White Sox would have a good bullpen even without Kimbrel. I mean, it could just be a spare piece for spare piece type of deal. And maybe they get a couple guys. With Duvall, like, he's not going to have a long leash. Like, I think the upside is high, but even if he starts the year as the closer, you know, all it would take is like a rough week in terms of him walking guys. And they've got guys that did fine in that role for them last year still on the roster.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Talk about, you know, it's been very in vogue in recent weeks to kind of make fun of how these two guys always get brought up together, but I'm going to keep bringing them up together because Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger, if you told anyone that both guys would have an ADP around 100 like a couple of years ago, you know, they would have been pretty surprised by that, but that's where we are. And if we're talking about tough projections, I don't think it gets much tougher than Yelich and Bellinger.
100% agree. I'm more optimistic about Bellinger than I am Yelich. I just look at the, like, what, just watching his at bats, I just wonder when's the power coming back. Every once in a while he runs into one, but I look at how he takes his at bats. I think he's a lot more passive than he used to be. I just don't think he's confident. I just don't think he's 100% healthy. I don't know if he's got that base. I think maybe after filing that ball off his knee, he just hasn't been able to generate the same sort of power since then. I'm pretty pessimistic about him. Whereas Bellinger, I think I've got a little bit more reason to believe in him.
Yeah, I mean, with both guys, they need to be putting in a ton of work this offseason, right? Like,
right.
You know, I think working with specialists, you know, going to places where, you know, maybe not even working with guys related to the team, but like Bellinger needs to get in the weight room. Bellinger needs to, you know, really be diligent with what he's putting into his body. Yelich needs to get the back figured out. Maybe needs to strengthen his lower body. We've seen. These are elite guys, right? Like they're right. Guys who, you know, Yelich was a top three pick for a couple of years. Bellinger was just, you know, he won an MVP at the age of 24. So, these are guys that if someone was going to just kind of rebound, you would expect it to be elite talents like this.
Right.
And I've actually I haven't ended up with any Bellinger yet. I have ended up with Yelich in one of my three leagues just because I feel better about him getting me double digit steals. And so I think Yelich plays every day, basically no matter what, as long as he's healthy. Whereas Bellinger, if he kind of is what he was this past year, or even just a little bit better than that, I don't think he gets everyday playing time with the Dodgers as stacked as they are. So I think Yelich has the higher floor of the two when you're factoring in the steals, but I'm not against drafting either guy right now. I don't think I would want both of them on the same team, but
right. The cost is right. I mean, pick 100. Yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah. I mean, I want exposure to both these guys in 2022, and it's a bit of a leap of faith. I've been meaning to try to get Vlad Sedler on the pod, but I mean, you gotta have a gut call with these guys, I think, to
for sure. Them. The thing about Yelich is the K rate just out of the blue in 2020 just spiked, and it came back down a little bit last year, but it's still well above career norms, 24%, as opposed to about 20 in previous years. It was 31 and 21, in 2020. What caused that? And I know there were some good dives on him. I think Fangraphs, and I'm forgetting the author. I cited him on the podcast before, and I forget. I'm sorry, I don't have it up my recall right now. But he said he just swung less. He was getting deeper into a lot of counts, and when he made contact, this is in 2020. He was making great contact. It's just he didn't swing as much, and I don't know. There's something a little off with him still. I don't know. Maybe I can be persuaded and talked into Yelich, but I feel like there's a better chance that Bellinger keeps what he does. The thing about the Dodgers too is they've lost Seager. Muncy might not be ready for the start of the season if we start the season on time, and they may have no choice but to play him. He might just have to work his way through it this year, as long as he's personally healthy himself too.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of how bad is he? Because they do have, like, it's just crazy how deep they are, especially with infielders in the upper levels and guys who are still hanging around the 40, like Edwin Rios and guys like that. But, I really hope we get spring training on time, because I just, if we get 10 days of one of these guys just raking in spring training, it's going to be hilarious to see where they start going in drafts,
right? And the hot takes that follow too, I knew it all along, and all
like that. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of video and people being like, this is what's different and all that stuff. So when in a second I want to ask you about one of the biggest prospect flops we've seen in recent memory, but first let's get a quick message from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette. Double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 7 states: Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. All right, Jeff. Jared Kelenic. You know, good luck projecting him with confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he someone where you're kind of just putting your hands up and looking at what Steamer says? And like, I don't know how I would even start with him.
Well, I mean, you can find what you want to find. You want to look at like how he closed. Okay, September was moderately encouraging. I think we had that's in our outlook on him. The problem is, you know, what he did is he's just not doing damage on pitches he should do damage on. I think our outlook talks about that too. And, you know, it's tough. You're right. I mean, you got to think, okay, maybe, you know, when he was killing it at AAA, he was doing it against players that hadn't been playing in 2020. They hadn't been getting the work at the alternate training camp sites. Maybe that's why some of these elite prospects, when they got called up, they flopped initially, is because when they were kind of killing it at AAA or even AA, they were playing against players that didn't have that full year, whereas he had at least the alternate training campsites work there. And maybe he was just feasting off of lesser competition. And then he finally faced real competition and couldn't do a whole lot with it. But then you look at his pedigree, you look at his opportunity in Seattle, you got to figure, I mean, they're going to roll with him, right? I don't think they're going to tear it up after in year two and say, okay, we're going to send you down for 3 months. I could be wrong about that, but I think they're going to give him a pretty long rope, and I think he'll have his time and chances to work it out. I know you and Clay did that pod before the end of the season. Like, you led off by saying people ask me where would you rank him now, and he goes, I'm not going to do that. We'll talk about where I'm going to do for 2022 with these guys in the majors. And you said you were kind of out on him at your anticipated ADP. Are you still out on him at his like 135 right now?
I am. Yeah. You know, he just has such a low floor, especially when you talk about the batting average. And he's not he's not a burner. Like he's not a guy where if he just gets the at bats and hits like 230, 240, he's getting you 20 steals. So, I think we kind of have to throw out what he did at AAA. I've been saying this a lot, but honestly, if he'd gone back to AA, that would tell me more than what he did at AAA, because AAA was just so bad in terms of the quality of pitching there last year. Yeah. He's almost the hitter version of Jacob deGrom, although going like 8 rounds later. But I am okay being wrong if he really comes all the way back. There's just, you can still get such high value players in that range, guys that you can bank on. You can still get guys that can help you with stolen bases. Like I would take, actually this probably isn't even a hot take anymore, because I think he's been going higher and higher, but like I would take Miles Straw over Kelenic, because I know what I'm getting there, and that would solve my stolen base issue at that point in the draft. I would take like Dansby Swanson over Jared Kelenic, because I mean Dansby Swanson's like median outcome this year is almost kind of what I view Kelenic's like realistic best case scenario as.
Right.
So it's not enough of a discount for me,
for sure. What about Willie Adames versus Jared Kelenic?
Yeah, I'd take Adames too. I mean, that he's a good guy to talk about just quickly, because you do you just throw out what he did in Tampa because of all the reports of him not being able to see with the batter's eye there? Like, do you just fully buy into what he did? And the other thing about Adames, that if you weren't paying attention, like late in the season, he basically was playing hurt in September.
Right.
So I think you could even argue that you throw that out too. But then you're left with such a small sample of what he did in Milwaukee before getting hurt. That is that enough to even run with?
We're only pulling the good stuff. Right. And then, you know, that's it. If you do that and then you extrapolate playing time over that, then you're putting him as a like top 60 player. But, you know, that's obviously we can't do that. The thing that we're, you know, that explanation makes sense, but why isn't it such a big problem for any other Tampa Bay hitters? Or is it, and we just didn't know?
Yeah. I mean, Jason Collette's been pretty convincing when I've talked to him about it, because like Adames always just hit on the road and never hit there.
I don't know.
I feel like I might be too biased here just because I watched him so much and sure. He just looked so dominant. Like he was just undeniably the Brewers' best hitter and it wasn't even close. And he's someone that I was high on. Basically, I kept drafting him in Tampa Bay, waiting for this player to emerge. So there's confirmation bias on top of just me watching him bias.
Right.
At the same time, like, you know, what, even if it's not the true player, like you're still getting him at like pick 130. So he could hit 250, 245. And I still think there's enough power and enough runs in RBI there to be fine with that pick.
Yeah, and if you're waiting on shortstop or if you're filling your middle in that slot, I'm okay with that. And, I mean, those splits are so damning. I mean, it's really hard to argue against that. The only thing about Adames that you don't get is you don't get a whole lot of speed.
Right, and I have, ideally in a snake draft, I've got my middle and my shortstop and second base filled with stolen base guys by the time we get to him.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe if I got stolen bases from, another position or something like that, or maybe I got like Trey Turner as my shortstop and I've got so many speed already locked in.
Right.
I feel good about what he's going to do, but there's a roster construction issue there. Jeff, I know you only got, a few more minutes left. Who else on this rundown do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about Vidal Brujan with the Rays, because I see where he's going and I see the stolen base upside. I mean, we all see it, and you see what he did in the minors and all that. But I don't see a clear path to playing time. Barring another deal, he's going around like what, 300 overall. It doesn't seem like that's that too punitive a price, but that's a starting spot. And I have a hard time getting there. I have a hard time getting to the playing time. The Rays are just loaded with outfielders. Obviously, he's not going to play a shortstop. Brandon Lau is going to play a second base. Where does Brujan play?
Yeah, no, I pretty much echo everything you said. I had Andrés Giménez listed next to him because I think it's fun to compare those two, because I feel better about Giménez's playing time, and you're just drafting both guys for the speed anyway. The thing about Brujan is, you know, he's always been this highly ranked dynasty prospect,
mm-hmm.
but just put yourself in like the shoes of Tampa Bay and like, how valuable do they think he is in the year 2022?
Right.
Like, this is a team that wants to win a World Series. They've got all kinds of depth. I mean, I think I would even argue that Taylor Walls is a better real life player right now than Brujan because of the defense. And they've got Josh Lowe coming, who's, I think, a better prospect and going to be a better real-life player than Vidal Brujan. And he gives you speed, too. I'd rather take Josh Lowe. I think he's going just outside the top 350 than Brujan. I echo everything you said about him.
Yeah, and I mean, he could have 40 stolen bases. I get it. He could also have 40 games. You know, he might have 40 at bats. And the thing is, had he hit at all in his brief little trial, maybe that would have given a little bit of push, but he didn't. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to end up with him a lot. And it's a shame because I know he gets you 20 stolen bases midseason. Well, great. That gets you 5 or 6 standing points right there. I will say this. If he does get called up, they make room for him. They make a trade that there is that they clear the path for playing time for him. Yeah, I'll be aggressive in Fab. But I think in many leagues, he'll be available in Fab. You're not going to want to hold on to him. And I always look at the NFBC prism too. Are you going to hold on to him for 7 weeks, 8 weeks with those 6 or 7 roster spots on your bench? Probably not. And then you're going to have to go bid big on him in Fab and then hope that he sticks that time.
Yeah. And the number one thing I'm trying to improve in my game is valuing plate appearances. And I kind of mentioned that with Yelich, but like for me, Bruhan, just, you know, even like he could steal like 20 bases this year in part-time duty, but you're just taking so many days where he's out of the lineup,
right,
and just killing you in runs and RBI. That's why, like, when we're talking about roster construction, those early picks, those picks in rounds 1 through 6, 1 through 7, like you just have to get your stolen bases there. Because otherwise, right, you get left chasing these guys who have just so many flaws in their game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in many cases, you're hoping to time the market. Like, you might have had Nicky Lopez's stolen base streak, but chances are half of those stolen bases were on your bench or on the waiver wire. And then what else did you get for that? You got some empty average, but no power, no counting stats.
I can tell you in a league that I co-managed with Todd Whitestone. I think we actually ended up cashing, but we dropped Nicky Lopez after he went like 3 weeks without a stolen base attempt. Mm-hmm. And then I think he stole like 4 bases the week after we dropped him.
Of course. Of course.
So yeah, that's, and then, yeah, when you don't have enough speed, you're just left doing all kinds of crazy stuff in terms of setting your lineup and chasing bad hitters on the waiver wire and stuff.
Exactly.
Jeff, I really appreciate you taking the time. Is there anything you want to plug?
No, just go get the draft kit. If you are listening and you're looking to do some winter research or just jump into DC, hey, we've got projections. We've got outlooks up on the site. James, you've been kicking butt on the offseason podcast. You're way ahead of me right now, I feel like. So, I just looking forward to doing a lot more, and I'm glad we had a chance to do this. We'll be doing a lot more baseball podcasts pretty soon. Scott Jensen and I will probably do an off-season one in the near future, so look forward to that too.
Absolutely. This was a blast. This has been the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by WinBet. I'll be back next week talking more redraft.